We're on fourth. This is kind of our fourth lesson. So we talked about the purpose of marriage and how to honor one another in our first two lessons. And then kind of in the pattern of the letters like Ephesians that address husbands and wives, we addressed wives first and talking about joyfully submitting. Now we're getting to the husbands, right? So this is a chance to learn about that. So we're going to take a couple of just kind of case scenarios just to kind of get discussion started. So here's Ronald, right? Ronald takes his spiritual leadership seriously. He's been taught by his pastor that as the man, he is the prophet, priest, the king of his household. God made him the unquestioned leader of his family, and he will be held accountable by God for their spiritual health. His wife, a college-educated woman, initially resists this teaching, but however, with the encouragement of his pastor, Ronald brings his weaker vessel in line by helping her to reject the evils of feminism and embrace the call to be a worker at home. All right, here's Ronald. So, based on this little description, what do you think Ronald gets right? What do you think that he's getting wrong with his view of leading or view of marriage? If you know any Ronalds, or if you're a Ronald, what do you think he gets right? What is he getting wrong?
Taking spiritual leadership seriously is a good thing.
Yeah.
Takes it
seriously.
Defining it as the next step.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that he'll be held accountable by God for his family's spiritual health.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely accountability there as the leader. Mm-hmm. Is he getting anything wrong?
He's getting it right that he's held accountable by God, but mm-hmm. not. What he's being held accountable for is not right.
Yeah.
We're never held accountable for results. Mm-hmm. We're held accountable for our mm-hmm. actions.
There you go. So you got kind of both going on there. Mm-hmm.
It's good to listen to your pastor.
Usually.
Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And feminism isn't a friend of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a like a secular ideology.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, there's two here, there's two there.
He's not the prophet, priest, or king.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, right? Let's just say that. He's not a prophet, or a priest, or a king. Unless in some other, if he happens to be, you know, this is located in somewhere he actually is a king, but. So, what do you think about. You know, question two, how does he react to contemporary culture? How much of this do you think is related to just a reaction? Is Ronald's view the contemporary view of the culture he's in? Most likely no, right? So how is he responding to the culture around him?
I think what I've seen is when you have extremism on one side, you're inevitably going to have a backlash of extremism on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had intersectional feminism, and then we had people like Andrew Tate pop up on the other side, which was just as radical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would say worse.
Mm-hmm.
But he was on the opposite end. And so we live in such like a hyper-split society
mm-hmm.
that there's always going to be an extreme backlash. There's rarely going to be a reasonable response because
mm-hmm.
it feels like reasonable responses don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. The old advice when you're learning to drive, you drift off to the right, don't
overcompensate
over to the left side of the road. So we talk about that a lot, and it could be that he is so opposed to the wrong views that he sees in feminism or the contemporary culture that he is adamantly opposing that, right? Seeking the opposite response in his mind or in the teaching. So let's think about long-term, right? He and his wife continue to live this way. Any long-term impacts you see on his wife? Let's talk about how she might respond to Ronald's leadership in this fashion. This goes on for a decade or two.
Well,
Yeah, she might. See, her view of him might be
like
diminished in terms
he's
of.
He's kind of like, he's kind of like my way or the highway.
Yeah.
Kind of guy, you know, like, and it's not wrong to be a leader,
mm-hmm.
and it's not wrong to be, you know, to say, you know, be the final decision maker. But I think what's wrong is that he's probably leaving very little for. Very little room for input from her.
Yeah. Yeah, probably, that's a good point. Maybe very little input for her.
Yeah, because, like, both parties are supposed to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's not just Christ, it's not just the church. But.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Mormon relationship where the Mormon wife has a relationship with God through her husband. And so if
he's
you
the
look,
priest.
He's
yeah,
priest.
He's a priest. He's the prophet. He's the king. And so he mediates her relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And there's when Christ is no longer a high priest, but your husband, you know, as wonderful as some husbands can be, you know, they can never do what the Lord can do.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he is a faithful husband, she's not learning to trust in Jesus so much as her husband. And that's spiritually perilous.
Yeah, you see, like Becky mentioned, that from his perspective, right, he has the wrong view that, like, he's evaluated from the Lord on her spiritual.
Yeah.
And then from her, she's evaluated by the Lord through her husband
right.
and his evaluation. So they have the husband playing this elevated role
yeah.
kind of in the place of the Lord.
Along those lines, it could really push her away from God if he is her picture
mm-hmm.
of authority. Mm-hmm. It could push her away and just completely shut down her faith and her,
mm-hmm.
her personality.
Yeah. It could be that if and it could shut down her growth or sanctification if it's not about what does the Lord desire,
mm-hmm.
what does the Lord want, it's what does my husband want. What does Ronald want? It's kind of a picture of that extreme Corinthians when Paul talks about the married person, you know, the disadvantage to the single is the single is only concerned on how to please the Lord. But when they're married, they're seeking to have to please their spouse. But here, it kind of overtakes the Lord. And dangers, I mean, is there anything dangerous in the sense that could be real harmful to Ronald or to her? Judy?
The wife could learn to dislike her husband and dislike the Christian lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's possibly kind of a tyrant.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Not saying he is, but she could view it that way.
Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely kind of a couple different reactions. There's one where you could kind of battle the fight or flight, like you could battle back, right? I'm rejecting my husband's leadership, I'm rejecting this, even Christ and the church. But there's also the sense in which there could be like the flight, where she's totally passive, totally surrenders to whatever he says, kind of gives up, subjugates any kind of responsibility and decision making for the Lord and growing in the Lord. It's just what's Ronald want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then on both sides, there's not really any conformity to Christ. There, you know, he's king, so
yep.
probably not going to ever think that he does anything wrong or his choosing mm-hmm. is always right. Which is, and then he's not leading her to conform to Christ. So the relationship in itself is just not. It's dangerous in the sense that they're not going to grow
mm-hmm.
in their faith.
Romans makes very clear, you know, don't challenge the authorities. So if you challenge the king,
yeah,
like tyranny tends to lead
yeah.
to abuse. So.
Yeah. Well, after this discussion, Ronald's son Declan. So we were talking about this at home, and I read this, and Chris said, "Declan, is that a name? Does anyone know any Declans?"
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Good.
It kind of fits with the profile.
It fits the profile. All right. All right. Ronald's son Declan moves to New York to pursue an art degree. Life in the metropolis opens his eyes to a new way of seeing the world. While he does not reject the Christianity of his youth, he rejects the patriarchy of his father. While at school, he meets and falls in love with a beautiful finance student. 10 years, two kids later, Declan's wife comes home and tells him that she got a promotion and the family will be moving to London. Knowing that his wife has already accepted the job, Declan quits his job as a sales lead at the Pottery Barn. He decides to act as a servant leader and take care of his children while his wife pursues her career as an investment banker. What's Declan get right? What does Declan get wrong?
Let's her degree will get you a job at Pottery Barn.
Okay. Is that correct?
That's
my brother got an art degree. That's great.
I don't work at Pottery Barn.
See? It'll get you at least Pottery Barn, sometimes
or
even
better.
More.
Yeah.
Or better. What else? Come on.
It hurts.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being a servant.
That's right. That's right.
It is how you act on that.
Uh-huh. What does that service look like?
Well, and the way that at least this states it, she comes home and tells him that she got a promotion and
yes.
that they're going to be moving to London. And as if the decision's already been made and he has no say.
Yeah.
And he just goes along with that. So that part's wrong mm-hmm. as far as, like, he's not taking any leadership to, like, well, is this good for our family? Let's talk about this, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm. Because nothing's said and done, even though she's accepted it. That doesn't mean that they have to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's right to deny or reject kind of the patriarchal type of leadership that his dad had, but like we talked about earlier, he can swing too far.
And driving on both sides of both ditches,
mm-hmm.
right? Are there specific things you kind of see as good, right? And I think in both these cases, there are a few, you know, positive things that they're doing.
Yeah.
But we see a lot of negatives as well.
He
it's hard.
Leave his faith.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. His dad's patriarchal activity could have pushed him away.
Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we do, not just in marriage, but we see a lot of times in believers, if they grow up in a certain church or a certain Christian environment and there's some flaw in their theology that they see
mm-hmm.
worked out, they often
yeah.
move to the opposite side of
yeah.
the spectrum.
Yeah. Sure.
Doctrinally or whatever it is.
I think there's something to be said for being very supportive of his wife
mm-hmm.
and her gifts and his
mm-hmm.
her abilities
mm-hmm.
and really wanting to accommodate those.
I mean, the fact that he had the wisdom as an art major to marry somebody in finance.
Yeah.
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 Sounds like a smart move to me.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's funny. Yep. And what do you think? Do you think, is this, what's his, when we talk about the question, how's he responding in contemporary culture? How do you think is this role and this kind of structure is viewed in contemporary culture?
That's right.
It's great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, where it says life in the metropolis opens his eyes, so he's pretty affected by.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have known. I've known several individuals that from smaller towns or smaller communities that life in the big city always opens their eyes, right? You're surrounded by thousands and thousands of people, in a sense, and that metropolitan. Often where the Christian view is a greater and greater minority, it's very eye-opening in the sense it's very hard to resist the pull, in a sense.
It's like a backwards Hallmark movie.
It's an interesting description.
So we really saw this cultural shift in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
When we were in college. Even, I would say, 5 years before that, women were still going into teaching, home, so it was home economics then.
Right.
This is at K-State. Lots of, things that they could do and still stay home.
Mm-hmm.
The shift when I was there is I was in my sorority, 90% of us were in the medical field. So just pre-med, pre-vet, just this major shift of becoming the breadwinners. So, and that has been progressed. My sister was there in the 80s, and it was the majority were in the what I would call professional field.
Yeah, when I was studying one of my classes on history of education, they talked about how during a similar time period, women only taught so long as they were single. And then once they got married, they left. Either on their own will or they were dismissed. Okay, you're married now, right? Or you're having children now. You're no longer fit for the workforce. So different era. So definitely change in the culture has affected in that sense.
I also remember I read a lot of Anne of Green Gables growing up.
Oh, yes.
Because it was a redhead who
I
wasn't
tell.
Demonized. I remember there was this whole bit about how their old pastor retired and they needed a new pastor. And there's this one that was she was really good, he had everything, but he was single.
Oh.
Can't have a single pastor in the church.
My.
So it just...
Different view.
On some level, I guess similarly with the policy of like how we view marriage and singleness has also adapted over the years.
Yeah. What about long-term effects? So imagine they're in London, right? Declan and Mrs. Declan, right? What do you think? Long-term impact on her or on Declan or kids?
Did they have pottery barns?
I don't know. Transfer.
I mean, that there could be more art opportunities in London.
There could be. Yeah, Judy.
There could be a shift in roles permanently. Like, she would become the person that would, in today's vernacular, rule the roost while he just kind of laid down and let her take over. Because it's easier that way for him than to go against his wife.
Yeah. And I mean, in both scenarios, you mentioned, you know, there could be a permanent kind of reversal of roles. And in both cases, we're talking about how both Declan and Ronald both kind of get their roles. They're kind of confused as to what their roles are supposed to be, right? And long-term effects, either way, the longer you live out that marriage and those roles without growing into the role that God has for you, the more that cements and causes more and more problems. It works itself out more and more in your marriage, in your children, those type of things. In the application.
I have a question in response to Judy's comment. She mentions that they'll grow into him being the submissive one in terms of roles. If his wife can come home and tell him we're moving, aren't they already there?
Yeah, I think what she's saying is it could cement or solidify us. That's, we don't know if this is like a shock and this is the first time that it, so we're not really sure of their situation. It could be that, you know, they're maybe egalitarian where they're both kind of sharing a role. And, hey, I got this job and I accepted it. Oh, okay. You know, but that could, again, develop into more and more.
Say that because she already accepted the job. And she didn't consult him about moving to London. She just said, we are moving. Like it was already a done deal. And she had made the decision, which either way, it should be a family discussion whether they move or don't move.
Yeah. So if you guys want to flip the page, I think what we're, so the topic, we call it loving leadership, talking about the husband. But you've got kind of extreme sides here where oftentimes we can be advocate, I'm trying to spell that correctly, dominate. Where it can be hard to balance in what does loving leadership look like? And you can see both Ronald and Declan kind of erring on I'm just going to completely step out. I'm not going to lead at all, right? Just whatever you want. I'm going to serve my wife. And then you've got Ronald over here saying, the only thing that matters is the, you know, the will of the king, the prophet, the priest. And so that's kind of what we're focused on is, what does this look like from Scripture? How can we serve our wives, love her, lift her up, but how can we also lead without dominate, lead in the way that Christ calls us to lead? So we're looking at scriptures that address the husbands, often right next to the ones that we looked at previously that address the wives, and look at what specifically does God call husbands to do? Wives, what should you be looking for and expecting from your husband? What should you not be expecting? How do those roles fit together? So we're going to look at Colossians and Ephesians. Look at these couple of texts as the main ones as we get into this. And the main point, right, you'll see there is that we're going to see that the best way to love your wives is to lead them towards Christ. So we're not leading our wives towards ourselves. We're not having them focus on what we want. We're not leading our wives to focus on what they want, right? So if you can almost think about it in that sense, that abdicating is just whatever the wife wants. That's the goal of my leadership, give her what she wants. Domination, whatever the husband wants, right? I'm the leader. But really, loving leadership is, what does Christ want, right? We're both submitting to what Christ wants for the husband, to what Christ wants for the wife. So when we get into this, if you were here last time, you might remember that these passages are from the household codes that address different kinds of relationships. And so you remember God addresses both the authority and then the subordinate member. And who does he usually start with? Subordinate. Yeah, he starts with the subordinate. So he talks to the person that's under leadership first, gives them guidance, and then addresses the authority second. So we have wives and husbands, children and fathers, slaves and masters, starting with the most intimate, going to the least. And you'll notice that in that day, many times the husband might have fulfilled all three of those roles. If he was a husband and a father, and if they had slaves, he would be the master, the husband, and the father. And so he was being commanded in each of these cases, where the subordinate member received one set of commands, the authority figure was, sometimes this was receiving direction and multiple layers of authority, multiple layers of accountability and responsibility. So the main thing is that both of the subordinates and the authorities are instructed, so all parties are accountable to God for how they respond. So whether you're in the authority or the subordinate position, you are accountable to God in terms of how you fit into that relationship, and how you either exercise your authority or how you are subordinate and submissive. Okay. I also think that one thing to remember too is that in some of these discussions, when people will see commands given, the question is asked, was that just for that time? Was that just for that culture? Why do you think that people will want to express that view? This was just for that time or that culture. Why would they want to take that view of a scriptural command?
So they can follow their own?
Yeah. If it's just for that time, that culture, it's no longer applicable to me today. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times underlying ways that we approach scripture is a way that allows us to escape from its authority over our lives. So one of the ways we know, or why we reason in our study here, is that these are centered on the Lord Jesus, right? And so the relationship that we see with Jesus and how marriage is going to be a picture of Christ in the church, since that's an ongoing from that time until today, it's guiding us that this is an ongoing, continuing direction, not just for those marriages at those times. So we got a short passage and then the longer passage. So first in Colossians 3:19, right? Let's go ahead and go to Colossians. We have the verse there. So does anyone remember 3:18? We did that last time. They're both real short. Colossians 3:18. Straight to the point.
Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord.
Yeah. One sentence. And then husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Right? So What are the two things that Paul says to the husbands? He gives two kind of actions, two verbs. Do what two things?
Love. Do not be harsh.
Yeah, so the positive and negative. We are to love, we're not to be harsh. Right? So put this on, don't put this on. Okay, what about being harsh? What does the verb be harsh indicate? The state of the husband's heart towards his wife. Good chance. If you weren't sure what harsh, like, look that up. When I looked it up, it could mean bitterness, anger, right? You're
the opposite of unloving.
Opposite of loving.
Impatient.
Impatient.
Controlling.
And his, why? Go ahead.
As I say, his command of it would indicate that there's probably a tendency to go that direction.
Yeah, yeah. So why do you think, open to anybody, why do you think that might be a temptation for husbands to be harsh with their wives?
Because they're different. They're just different than you.
Yes, they are different. Sometimes it's hard to understand when people are different.
They view the marriage as transactional.
Okay, in what way? Like?
I did the dishes and you can't even pop my back? Like, what even is this?
That's the example I was thinking of. Any other?
I think this is often when there's conflict, disagreements, arguments. This is often the way husbands win, because they just overpower, whether with their words or physically, as they're yelling or things like that. If they can't out argue their wives, they'll just overpower.
Yeah. I noticed. I actually didn't notice this. My wonderful helper, Carissa, pointed out to me that when we were disagreeing on something, sometimes, inadvertently, the volume and tone of my voice would change. And I didn't realize it, but I would notice a change in her. And I said, you seem to be acting different. You know, it's like, well, you're speaking really loudly right now. So, one of the verses that I thought of was, it's from Matthew. It's in several of the Gospels, but Matthew 20:25. But Jesus called to them and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles, or the peoples, right, all the peoples, when you're rulers, you lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whomever would be great among you must be your servant." And so there's this idea that leadership is equal with exercising power and showing that you are the alpha leader. You're dominating. You are exercising that. You must submit to me. And so that kind of spreads throughout most of the cultures of most, no matter where you go, like what Tanner's saying, is that authority and power and strength are kind of all linked together in that sense. So I think in that sense, there's a natural inclination that when we want to exercise authority, and that's the way our flesh thinks that we should do it. It's what we naturally do. It's like kids, you don't have to train them to take something and say, "That's mine." You don't have to train men that, okay, when you're upset, you want your way. It just comes naturally.
Even though it's not culturally acceptable, the women are still seen as the weaker vessel. So even if you don't say you believe that, there's still that tendency towards someone taking dominance.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That so everyone kind of, either they say it or they know, someone has to be leading here. Someone has to exercise leadership there.
Remember, there's a big competition that was televised on Survivor, and they had the men working together and they had the women working together. Amongst the men, there was an agreement like, yeah, this guy's the best leader. He's going to lead us. We're just going to do whatever he says. And amongst the women, there is this desire, this really positive desire to we're all going to work together. And there's going to be no leader. We're all a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And when there was no leader, nothing got done. Because there was no end to the discussion.
Yeah.
And discussions are good and they're necessary, because if you don't have them, then there's tyranny. But if all you have is discussion, then the action will never.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing to note here is mentioned in the bottom of your handout is that if you both believe that you're the authority and you can kind of enforce your will but not win her love and respect, right? Like, he feels like she ought to submit to me, and if he has to kind of force her to do so, she's not lovingly, right? She's not going to respond to him in the way that he wants, because he's not leading her in the way that he ought. And so when he does that, he's going to feel harsh or even bitter or angry that things aren't going, this isn't the way that our marriage ought to be in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Pop culture reference here from 25 years ago. It was like in Gladiator, when Commodus is very upset that his sister won't fall in love with him, and he resorts to controlling blackmail and threats.
Yeah.
You know, which, when you have strength, it's like some people with money believe that money can solve all their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Some people with power believe that power can solve all their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of like dialing down the power and dialing up the love, they just want to use their power to procure their love.
Yeah. Okay. So, the positive, love your wives, right? Do not be harsh with them. And so, it's good. So we have to, kind of have to then define a little bit more clearly what does that look like a little bit more. What are some ways, maybe if you know someone, not you, or, you know, but what are some ways that Christian husbands can be harsh with their wives? What are some examples? Help us to flesh that out.
Working together like in agriculture.
That's just working together is good.
Yeah, I won't even say it's a friend, it's us.
Yes. There's opportunities to be harsh.
He wants to make sure you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's very, don't do this, do this, be safe. Okay.
Clarity in communication.
What's that?
My goal is just to have clarity in communication.
Uh-huh.
I don't need to be part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. One that I thought of was, my mom and dad had a good marriage at times, but one of the ways that my dad would be harsh is kind of like a belittling. So like if my mom would say something that he thought didn't give a lot of weight to, he wouldn't really tear it down, but he would kind of like, yeah, you know, that's not right because. And so it would kind of just deflate in the discussion, just almost like a talking down to, and not really listening and questioning and respecting. So it didn't happen a lot, but it would really stand out when it happened.
I can add to that one, just kind of making fun of her,
mm-hmm.
and just maybe her mannerisms, the things that she enjoys, the things that she does.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Being the kind of the butt of the joke all the time.
Yeah.
Being hard on the wife when mistakes are made, maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, just kind of being critical or hard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like not showing grace. I mean, just coming home and why is this place in a mess? Why, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Go
what
off
you been doing all day?
Yeah.
What have you been doing all day?
Yeah, kind of a lack of even considering what it's like,
yeah.
what her day is like and things, you know. One of those things like, okay, let's switch for for a day and have you try.
Yeah. Like financially harsh? Like say the wife has to stick to a very strict budget or has to always ask for permission to use any money or
mm-hmm.
to buy anything mm-hmm. or even say grocery shopping or whatever, give him proof, whereas say maybe if he's being harsh, he doesn't follow the same agreements.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think so much of this is contextually based. I think you look at the example of the spending.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just straight up like that, then yeah, that's harshness.
Mm-hmm.
If she has a tendency of spending much more than they have, then depending on how he approaches it, it's no longer harshness.
Mm-hmm.
That's reasonable. In the same way that if he spends too much, it would be reasonable to for them as a couple to impose limits upon him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes down to are you doing it together, or are you forcing each other into something? And sometimes you need to guide each other, but generally speaking, forcing somebody into something isn't
mm-hmm.
a good idea.
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about too in some of these examples is the husband expecting and desiring that she meet his expectations or the Lord's expectations. Like, what is he calling her to and helping her grow to? Is it just, I want to make sure that she meets what I desire and what I expect, and if she doesn't, then I'm angry and I'm bitter? Or is she growing in the Lord, serving the Lord, obeying the Lord? And is that your goal?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's helpful for husbands to realize that they're being harsh when they may not know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, when I'm at my job, this is how I talk to my employees.
Mm-hmm.
To clearly communicate that this is what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing, she gives me critiques, so I'm going to give her critiques.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a difference, because when your wife gives you a critique, you don't have to obey that. But when you give a critique, if she's a godly wife, right, she has to obey and address that. So there is sometimes it's just good to know that you just have an extra weight because of the authority God gave you.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you say just is heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Every critique, she can give you the same critique, you give the same critique, yours, because of your authority, is heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And so just not overburdening her with critiques, just understanding that maybe there'll be like a feedback imbalance in the relationship, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to do that because she does it, I can do it, and
yeah.
Ask permission.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it, like, I'm not the artist, my brother's the artist, but like sculpting, if you're sculpting with granite versus clay versus like harder and softer, like the amount of force and pressure you use with your tools to help sculpt needs to be appropriate,
mm-hmm.
so that it's not too hard or too soft. It's going to accomplish the correct purpose that you need. So you kind of have to be aware of,
bull in a china shop, right?
Yeah. You just, sometimes you just don't know that it's, I think things I've grown more and more aware of, that I used to only think about the actual words that I used. That's the only thing I thought communicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about body language, tone of voice, facial expression, all of those carry a lot more meaning than I think it realizes. And so in a sense, your words might be fine, but you're doing damage or kind of destroying the china closet, right,
yeah.
In a sense.
Well, is your relationship open enough that you can say you're being a little harsh?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Lloyd and I have, our word is, you're using the tone. Okay. So let's back up a little bit and do it without the tone. So that's kind of our code word. So I think being able to say, okay,
yeah.
This is, you're coming across harsh to me.
Yeah.
So.
That's good. Did you guys figure that out really early, or was that take a long time to?
No, we still talk about being open about it. We're going through a marriage devotional right now. In fact, that was one of the questions: is, are we communicating? How are we being loving in our communication, and are we sharing if we are not?
Mm-hmm.
And question of that. That's just one of the things you have to keep on the table.
Hmm.
That can communicate that that's coming across that way.
Yeah, and one thing I think to remember is, you know, we're going to see how marriage is a picture of Christ in the church. And Jesus gave harsh words to the disciples and difficult words and things that were not easy to hear, that rebukes. But so that doesn't mean that you can't correct and rebuke and say difficult things to hear, right? There's a loving way in which to say that. And it's not just the way in which you say it, but the purpose for which you're saying it. So he was giving sometimes those difficult teachings and rebukes because he knew this is what they needed to hear, right? And it wasn't just because it offended him. Okay. What were you going to say? Something?
Yeah, I was going to say, like Tanner and I are going through a book about how to be a godly husband. Mm-hmm. And we just, right now I'm just going through the chapter about how, communication, and just talk about how, the three things that matter a lot are the words, but also then the tone, and then also the nonverbal communication. Because just in the tone, the same thing you say could mean six different things. Mm-hmm. About how it's not about always what you say, but how you say it. But then also the nonverbal communication, that if, proximity to the person and whether or not, just through that, there's a lot more than just the words you're saying.
Yeah, and when you think about the command that we've studied, we'll see about how your husbands are commanded to live with their wives in an understanding way. And part of understanding is, if you do have something difficult to say, there's a lot of things to consider, like what time of day, what's the setting, what's the opportunity you're going to take to talk about something if it's important that you need to do. Is it, you're not going to do it right when you get home, or right as supper's being made, or right in the wrong time, right? You want to think about all those times where you have time set aside, you're not going to be interrupted, you don't have other things that are kind of stressing you at the moment. So taking those things into account can also help you convey things in a way that's not a harsh way. All right, let's look at, question E. We talked about harshness. Let's go the opposite. Okay, so I was giving you some examples. All right, already thinking ahead. What would be the opposite? Think about, you're the husband, you're going to love your wife and not be harsh with her. You're going to, what are some examples or descriptors of ways that husbands can be not harsh?
Giving grace.
Okay, showing grace.
Being gentle.
Mm-hmm. Being gentle.
Yeah.
In speech, just in everything.
In all of it.
Yeah. So what's a gentle way of speaking versus a harsh way of speaking? What's it look like? Still figuring that out? I'm being gentle right now.
You don't understand how much I'm holding back.
I'm holding back all my wrath.
Yeah, I mean, not correct, jumping to correction, mm-hmm. speaking, tone, gently is calmer. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not getting excited, mm-hmm. but just kind of having a conversation and not letting things, emotions, drive the conversation.
Yeah.
I think asking questions and being mm-hmm. open to the idea that maybe your judgment has been wrong.
It's possible.
We're not entirely informed mm-hmm. yet.
In that whole questioning, just having a conversation more than just telling, I think mm-hmm. is a big, big way mm-hmm. To think about it. What else?
Let's say you do have something corrective to bring up.
Okay.
Just thinking ahead.
Just for example.
Yeah, just thinking ahead about your wife, right, and how you need to communicate that to her. Like, knowing your wife, right? Living in an understanding way means you know them, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing your wife, thinking about the best way to communicate that to her. So just that forethought before you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Planning, thinking.
I think you talked about time. So Floyd knows evening is not a good time because mm-hmm. I'm turning into a pumpkin really early.
Yeah.
morning into early afternoon, if there's something we need to face together, that's the best time. And I think just know that's part of knowing
uh-huh.
your wife. Because I tend to be way more reactionary when I'm tired.
Yeah.
And so we have really opposite clocks. He's really on game late at night. I am not.
Yeah.
So recognizing that we're really different, so we really had to find some, when we were both working, we made lunch a couple times a week a priority.
Yeah.
So that, because that was really the most productive time for us too. We were talking to kids.
You're both kind of alert and on.
Because we were, our brains were kind of both functioning. We could speak without one of us being tired.
Yeah.
So timing was really everything. So again, we're moving into a new stage where we're together a lot.
Okay.
So that's kind of switching.
Oh.
Just because there are opportunities for communication kind of throughout the day. But I think really, again, that's part of just knowing. And we've been married 40 and some years.
Okay. In the 40s.
And it's taking, it's taken that long to just really, and again, there's just adjustments. So many stages, kids, marriage, kids' marriages, grandchildren.
Yeah.
You know, just all the stages you have to work through.
I think the opposite of harsh is realizing that you're on a team together against the issue.
Yeah.
And it's never going to be.
You're not on opposite sides facing one. Because when we get on opposite sides, we think that the problem is the other person. So when we're on the same side, it's out there. It's a big, big victory. Because you're both working on the same problem and you know we're together. Mm-hmm. On the same fight, same struggle.
I think the opposite of harsh is just being kind.
Yeah.
How you talk to and how you listen to your wife, that can, I mean, usually if you see somebody talking to their wife in a demeaning or negative way, they're being harsh.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing those things and you're being kind and you're understanding, that's the opposite.
Being patient when there is something that you had to address with her, sin issue, something like that. Being patient that the Lord will do this work in her and not be in that.
Yeah. Yeah, patient. Trusting the Lord that
I just keep bringing
the Lord
up.
Is working, no matter how it goes in this conversation.
Yeah, men can nag too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think being aware of when you're tempted to be harsh, like if a lot of times, harshness is a response to maybe you feel disrespected, or you feel like you've been unfairly attacked or something like that. And you know, that's the temptation, is to defend yourself. And often men, I think, defend themselves with the strength of our personality or force. Instead of just being patient and just, I don't have, you know what I'm saying, like taking a step back.
Yeah, and I think,
and you might be misreading the whole thing wrong.
And it happens, I think, in all of, it could happen in every relationship, but especially in your marriage. That, take the example the other way. Let's say the wife, there's something she's concerned about, and she wants to bring it up with her husband, right? One way you can really be harsh is that immediately you're jumping back and
the inner lawyer
just comes out, and you start, it's more about arguing instead of like, let's ask questions. Let's bring out, I want to make sure I'm hearing everything, and question. And just a general practice that we should have every time anyone corrects or brings something up is that make sure you listen, make sure you hear what they're saying, set aside, right? It's the whole, a wise man loves to be corrected, but whoever who eats correction is stupid. We used to have this verse.
Even by his wife. Yeah.
One of our children, we read that verse. Whoever loves correction is wise, and he hates correction is stupid. And this child said, what does this mean? This child said, it means I'm stupid.
In reference to what Andy was talking about, like in terms of being mean, I've had people tell me that, like our love language as a couple is meanness. And I think I struggle with that.
Yeah,
where it's
good.
If your first tendency.
It's not one of the five, is it?
It's not. It's the sixth one.
If the way that you show affection to somebody is being unkind to them, I don't think that you're ready for a relationship.
Got lots of problems.
And there's a difference. You can tease somebody, right? Like there's
sure.
There's teasing, but if your first instinct is to be mean to someone, oh, that's how I show love. No, it's not.
No.
And even if you think it is, there's like that clearly indicates that there's something wrong with the way that you fundamentally view love.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, next time we're going to get into the lengthier text of Ephesians. So if you want to do any homework, just be reading through Ephesians this week. Let me pray for us, and we'll move on with our morning. Father, I thank you for our great discussion this morning. I thank you for the commands that you give both husbands and wives, the commands that you give to all believers of how we can love one another. And I thank you that you showed us love in your Son. You showed us his love and showed us your love for us and redeeming us, calling us to turn from our sin and trust in you. And pray that this morning you would continue to be glorified as a great and mighty God, a God of love and compassion, a God of great justice, a God of so many excellencies and beauties. I pray that our marriages would glorify you in this way, and that for those who are still looking to be married, that they would long for and seek out and desire a spouse who would love you and honor you in this way, and that they would desire to be a man or woman that would honor you in their marriage. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.